This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 20 for September 7th, 2008. Let's rock. It's time for the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 20. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that discusses all things iPhone. And joining me tonight on our panel is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How was Photoshop World?
Photoshop World was great, and I had a lot of fun. I was there for 2 days, and I can safely say that there was so much nonstop action that I really didn't get to sleep till I got back to Denver.
That really sucks. But you had fun at Photoshop World, right?
Absolutely.
Now, what goes on at a Photoshop World? I've never been. It just sounds like a magical place where just Photoshop things happen.
It is. They have a lot of sessions where you can learn how to do all the stuff with Photoshop that you never knew you could do. And then they have this big expo floor, and it's actually really good size expo, where you have all of these vendors that relate to some way in Photoshop or photography. And so you get to spend a couple days with like the top Photoshop experts in the world, and then get to play with all the coolest toys that you could possibly get for photography or Photoshop. And you're doing it in Vegas, so what more could you ask for?
Sounds like a blast. I would really like to, you know, I kept saying, the entire time at New Media Expo, I kept saying I would never want to go back to Vegas. I would like to go back to Vegas for Photoshop World. That sounds great. But I really can't justify it right now just because of, you know, as far as I'm running iPhone Alley and not really running I'm a Photoshop guy.com or anything like that, but sounds great. I would love to some point.
Well, if you want to learn more Photoshop stuff, it's a really cool way to do it.
Excellent. And Adam Christensen's here from the MacCast. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How have you been?
I've been fine. I didn't get to go to Photoshop World though.
Yeah.
Either. I don't know if I'd want to be back in Vegas so soon. I'm surprised Jeff made the trek. But, you know, I guess, Michael, you'd be back next year when they have Photoshop for the iPhone, right?
Right. And, well, isn't there going to be Final Cut Pro for the iPhone as well?
Yeah, we're just going to do everything on our iPhone in about a year.
Yeah, that's where it's headed as far as, you know, I wouldn't want to use. Honestly, I would not want to do. All, you know, there are a lot of people who do, who just like the iPhone is their little mini computer, and they walk around and they don't use anything but that. And, you know, their computer is at home and they don't need to worry about that. I can't deal with that. You know, I can do certain things on the iPhone, but I just, for whatever reason, it's not responsive enough, or it doesn't have the screen size that I need. It's a great companion. You know, I mentioned to the guys last week, I think after the show was done recording, that I was getting into Star Trek Enterprise, and that's kind of left over from you know, all the geeky stuff that we did in Las Vegas. But I'm looking at, you know, the pads that they have, the little you know, control things that, you know, do, you know, scanning and, sure, and all that. You can tell that I'm not a huge Star Trek geek, but because I don't know all the terminology. But, you know, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, geez, that is the iPhone right there. I mean, yeah. What they're doing, I mean, if you ever, I don't know if they really show what's on the screen, but I'm getting a hint that it's not as advanced as, you know, what the iPhone is. So it's really, it makes it feel like the iPhone is really gonna, just the whole multi-touch thing and just having a computer in your hand. You know, Star Trek makes the imagination fly. So that's why I like the Star Trek.
Yeah, it becomes a classic chicken and the egg scenario, though, is do we have cool stuff because of Star Trek, or is it just the way things are going? You know, classic debate.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I
mean, the side that says a lot of the cool stuff we have is because of Star Trek.
Yeah,
I think so. I think that one summer I'm just going to close, just go with a buddy, to his house and just stock up on a whole bunch of Red Bull and just make a lightsaber. And I know that's not Star Trek. I'm not, you know, confused or anything, but I'm thinking, you know, at some point I'm just going to do it, because that's what George Hotz did, right? He just one night he said, you know what? I'm going to unlock the iPhone. I'm just going to get a whole bunch of Red Bull. I'm going to stay up all night and I'm going to do it. So I think that's all you need is determination and Red Bull. We could sponsor Red Bull now, or Red Bull could sponsor us rather. And finally, joining us, I'm sure Arnold loves Star Trek as much as we do. Arnold Kim. Arnold Kim is from Mac Rumors, and he is joining us. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me. Hey. Yeah, I wasn't a huge Trekkie, but I appreciate the advanced technology aspect of it all. Star Trek was imagined decades ago, so I think we can cut it some slack that the iPhone's ahead of it.
Yeah, definitely. So. If they ever come out with a Star Trek, the next generation, we may just see them, you know, holding iPhones.
Right, right. No, the iPhone. I mean, that's the appeal of the iPhone, though. I think you were at Macworld 07, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone in that audience when, you know, he showed multi-touch and, you know, animations and everything, everyone was just amazed, and it was like, I've never seen this before. I need this.
Yeah, so. Especially with you know, the pinch and all that. Obviously, when he said, this is, you know, we're going to be doing these three things, and, you know, I had never been so worn out after Steve Jobs' keynote. It was just, it was amazing. You know, the entire iPhone keynote, but especially with the multi-touch, where he went and did the photo pinching. I think we all just gasped when we saw that, because it was so cool.
Everyone's mouth was agape. It delivered everything that anyone had ever imagined possible, and really beyond what everyone expected sort of at the time. So that's it definitely like exceeded most people's expectations.
And you're really looking forward to the rumored multi-touch tablet, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that if and when it ever comes. I was a big Newton fan back years when the Newton was, I guess, at its peak towards the end, right before Jobs killed it. Mm-hmm. But I was a big fan of the Newton, and in a lot of ways it was sort of hints of what the iPhone had eventually became. The biggest problem with the Newton that limited its utility back in the day, I mean, you know, people always talk about the handwriting recognition, but the lack of any sort of always-on internet made it a lot less awesome, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I think that even if it did have an always-on internet connection, it wouldn't be able to do, it wouldn't mean as much back then, just with its limited capabilities. One, obviously the browser probably wouldn't be there to do too much, but, you know, the internet wasn't, you know, as big a deal as it is now, because it was still, you know, growing up, and, you know, I don't know that the internet has fully grown up at this point. There's a lot of, you know, garbage on YouTube and all of that, but
it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, I know it wasn't that long ago.
I got my Newton, which was the 2000 and in the year 2000.
Okay.
So, you know, and Michael crashed, blah blah blah.
Michael, you might not have you ever worked with? You would be surprised at what the capabilities on the Newton was, and for the time, and for the internet that was available at the time. I mean, it had a full internet browser experience on it. It was an incredible device. I had a 110, so I always was envious of the people who had the 2000s and the 2100. But yeah, the Newton was just way ahead of its time, I think, and it certainly, the iPhone, you know, is in very, very much a lot of ways like the you know, next generation of the Newton.
Yeah. Well, I remember seeing that video. The video where it showed, I don't think it was the Newton. They called it something else, but it was this device that you could just, you know, the guy kind of came home and put the device
navigator.
Down. The Knowledge Navigator, exactly.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah,
classic video.
I remember seeing that, but I admit that I've never actually used or seen in person a Newton. So, you know, maybe you'll have to bring yours along, Arnold.
They're still an incredible device. I mean, there's a whole enthusiast group that still uses them, and I mean, they can do a lot, and I think they've even got, you know, open source operating systems running on them now. And I mean, they were a pretty powerful device. They have an ARM processor in them that's, you know, fairly decent, and I think holds up. So
the a lot of the Newton, a lot of the hardcore Newton folk have sort of jumped ship, I think, in the last year or two, especially to the iPhone. I know Adam Tow, T-O-W. I don't know if you guys recognize that name. He was a big Newton guy, and then lately I've seen him at, or I haven't seen him, but I've seen his name associated with iPhone dev, meetings and whatnot. So,
yeah, I'm gonna. Dying. I should probably check out a Newton just so I know, what I'm talking about.
Heritage, yeah, where it's coming from. I mean, the funny thing about the Newton, and you mentioned the handwriting recognition, is that, graffiti was developed for the Newton and is still common on like Palm devices and stuff.
See, I didn't realize
I believe.
That.
I haven't used a Palm in a while, but
yeah, I remember the first handheld device that I had was a Palm M100 or something like that. It was black and white and cheap, and it was pretty cool for me at the time. And then at some point, I moved to a pocket PC, a Windows-based pocket PC, that was pretty cool. So I was used to the ability to copy and paste and all that kind of stuff, and that it was running sort of a full OS in there, and that you could. I think the one that I had didn't have a web browser. No, I think it did. I think it had Internet Explorer in it, but it really served no purpose because the only way you could actually get to the internet on it was if it was docked in its actual docking station, and you had it set up to share the internet between that, or if you had like a Wi-Fi modem in the I guess it was a compact flash slot. So yeah, there's that. Moving on from reminiscing, let's talk about some iPhone news. This is going to be our big honkin' rumor roundup show, I guess, because, Tuesday's the day, right? Apple has confirmed that there will be an event on September the 9th. And what's that event called? It's Rock
Let's
On?
Rock. Let's Rock.
Let's Rock, yeah. And so I guess the event, invitation rather, that went out looks like an iPod screen, with one of the silhouette dancers on there that says "Let's Rock" and the date and time and all that. It's pretty obvious that with this, the way the invitation looks, it's going to be something about the iPod, and that's kind of what we expect from a September announcement from Apple. But there's been a lot of rumors coming in from Kevin Rose, actually. He's got, I don't know what his sources are, and he's kind of new to the whole, rumor game. But he has said that what we'll be seeing from the September 9th event, we'll be seeing a new iPod Nano, I believe, which is kind of weird to me, just because we just recently saw a refresh of the iPod Nano, and they squished it down and it plays video and all that. And I really like the way it looks and all of that, but it's going to look a lot more like the previous generation Nano, I guess it would be. And it's going to be a little bit more rounded and all that, but that this is the iPhone show. So, we can talk about iTunes though. iTunes 8 is going to be, coming out according to Kevin Rose, and, it's going to be coming with a Genius feature, which suggests songs and that kind of thing based on what's in your library already. So it's kind of like, I haven't really used the mini store thing that much, but I think it's going to be what that should have been as far as suggesting new music. It's going to kind of be like a Pandora radio, at least from what it sounds like. Arnold, you obviously read about this on Mac Rumors. What do you think about the Genius feature? Hello, Arnold.
Did we lose him?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Oh, sorry, I must have muted it. I read about it. I actually heard about it ahead of time by just some anonymous submission, which you can never tell for sure. But it's all consistent, and essentially what they're saying is that I think it may. I'm not sure if it apply. It may even apply to your iPod Nano or the new iPods as well. In that, for example, you're on the road and you're listening to some song that you love and you want to hear more songs like it, and then they'll go out and somehow figure out which songs in your library are similar to that song and then play them for you in a sort of an on-the-go playlist. At least that's one possibility. And I guess I assume it's certainly going to be included in iTunes if it's included in the you know, standalone iPods. I'm sure it's included in iTunes 8 as well.
Right.
And it's a nice feature. I don't know if it's, you know, groundbreaking or everyone's going to really go crazy about it. I mean, I kind of know what music I have. I guess I'll have to experience it to tell.
Yeah, and you know, I've had good and bad recommendations from Pandora. You know, as everyone has. You know, at some points it'll be spot on, and you'll just be getting so much good music out of it, and you'll be, you know, discovering so many new artists. And at the same time, it'll start picking things that you just have no idea why it's, you know, picking that. And of course, it'll always say because of male harmonies and major key tonality. At least that's always what it says for me. I don't know if that's what it says for everyone else, but you know, I would love to see that kind of feature. I really like Last.fm's implementation of that, because instead of, you know, picking a song and saying go find me more stuff based on, you know, this one song that I like, and you really kind of have to train it based on that. So maybe after a while it gets really good, but with Last.fm, it does recommendations based on, you know, everything that you've ever played. When you had Last.fm or the scrobbling enabled in iTunes, and I really like that. So I think that, you know, if the Genius feature is built into iTunes, it would be interesting to see how that works out with people with more eclectic tastes, you know, someone who has a whole bunch of rap and a whole bunch of classical and some, you know, some rock stuff and all that. It may throw it and you might get something really strange, but at the same time, if it works based off of, you know, what you're listening to, or maybe even what you've listened to very recently, and maybe kind of analyzes what that trend is and kind of recommends based on, you know, those little specific, you know, you say, you know, you've listened to Radiohead for the last week, you know, with some other like random, you know, alternative rock stuff or something like that. If it notices that kind of thing, then it would be very helpful. But, you know, if it's just looking through your entire iTunes library, I can see it either working really, really well for me at least, or, you know, kind of just being, you know, a feature that I don't use. So it's good that Apple's adding that to iTunes, because iTunes, the feature list of iTunes has kind of been, you know, lagging. Obviously, the, you know, features for, you know, activating the iPhone and all of that, technical features have been added to iTunes. But, you know, it'd be nice to see some more features. Kevin Rose has also mentioned that there would be a new visualizer in there. And what was that visualizer that everyone thought that it might be based off of, or it might be it?
Magnetosphere?
Yeah, the magnetosphere.
Kevin Rose, he's since confirmed that that's the one that he says he saw.
Oh, okay.
In iTunes.
All right. So he's...
can I just say, I mean, that to me, I'm really glad that Apple and their engineers have spent, you know, a long time adding a new visualizer to iTunes 8. Doesn't it just find that, like, just so... Does anybody use visualizers? I mean, they're cool and everything for about, you know, 20 minutes the first time you see them, but I don't know anybody who uses one on a daily basis. So I have to wonder. I mean, that rumor might be true, but why are they spending their time doing that? Maybe they didn't. Maybe it's just something they just threw in and there's no time involved in developing something like that. But it was just surprising when I read that rumor. I just immediately thought, there's a feature I don't need.
Well, I don't think that it was, you know, something that they really had to spend a lot of time on, because, you know, if it is Magnetosphere, then it was something that a third party made and Apple just said, sure, hey, we'll buy that and throw it into iTunes.
But I mean, does anybody care? I mean, I'm just picturing them up on the stage at this big event going, and we have a new visualizer.
You know, I don't think he might. I don't think he'll demo it like he did, you know, the original iTunes visualizer, where he just sat there for like 5 minutes, just looking at it and saying, "Whoa!" And, you know, letting the audience.
You do realize that Steve Jobs was stoned when he was staring at that.
He got stoned especially for that presentation, so he would be really intrigued by the visualizer.
So he was more of an acid kind of guy.
But, you know, I didn't say it was pot. I mean, he could have totally
that's
been
true. That.
This is going to be all over Mac Rumors in like 10 minutes.
Oh, man, that Steve Jobs. Okay. I thought that was known, though. Pirates of Silicon Valley. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There was that scene where he was in the wheat field with the classical music.
Yes.
Yes. But no, I don't think he'll like demo it or anything like that. But as far as, you know, people who actually use the visualizer, I have a friend, one in particular that comes to mind, who actually uses Winamp constantly. He does not like iTunes for more than one reason, it's not just the visualizer, but Winamp does come with a really great visualizer. I think it's called Milk Drop, and I guess it renders with the GPU rather than the CPU. And as far as I can tell, with the stuff in iTunes, the visualizers, it's mostly CPU, and it's kind of accelerated by OpenGL and that kind of thing. But I really like the new visualizer that they've added with Leopard, and I would honestly use them more if my the computer that I use to actually store all of my music and listen to my music, it has, you know, some nice speakers hooked up to it. That computer just doesn't have enough horsepower to do visualizers. You know, I've been listening to a lot of Radiohead lately because I saw them at Lollapalooza. And so I'm thinking, oh, it'd be great to have, you know, visualizer going, you know, while I'm listening to this, maybe just like in the background and kind of looking over, and it's cool and, you know, whatever, because the computer doesn't really do anything besides play music. But it's very choppy. And so I guess for me, I would definitely use the visualizer, at least if my computer could do it. So I think there are a lot of people out there who would use a visualizer. Obviously, it's not worth a lot of time for Apple to to invest a lot of time into that. But you're
getting an email from Al Gore.
Am I getting an email from Al Gore? Why?
Because you're gonna have your screen on doing a visualizer rather than saving some energy.
Yeah. Hey, my phone's ringing. I should really pull the phone off the hook when I come down here to the pod cave to do my podcast. But yeah.
It's actually Al Gore calling you right now.
It is Al Gore calling me. How did you know? You know, my mother, she came out to me at the first Macworld that I went, came out with me, I should say, to the first Macworld I went to. And I ran up to see Steve Jobs after he gave his big keynote. And I just kind of handed her all of my stuff. I had like a backpack and a big SLR and all that. I just handed it all to her, and I started running, you know, through the crowds and all of that. And she decided that she was going to try and find me after I had done that. And so she's kind of pushing her way through the crowds, and she just kind of, brushes past someone and like almost knocks someone down. And she realizes that it's actually Al Gore that she had almost knocked over. And she's getting these weird looks from like the Secret Service agents who are standing around him and, you know, all that. And she's like scrambling to take a picture with the camera that I handed her. Obviously she couldn't, you know, get it to work in time because, you know, she wasn't used to it and whatever. But yeah, my mother almost knocked over Al Gore. And so I wouldn't be surprised if he had something against us.
I doubt it. So what are the new features, Michael?
What are the new features in iTunes? There's a grid view,
library, delicious monster type thing.
Yeah, there's a grid view thing, and I really kind of brushed past that and really didn't give that much attention. I wonder what that would look like. What do you think that's going to look like?
I mean, the rumor I had heard said, you know, basically it's like the Delicious Library, if you've ever used that application, or I would imagine very much Apple TV-esque with sort of your album covers or DVD covers or, you know, TV show artwork or whatever laid out kind of a visual grid sort of on, you know, virtual shelves or whatever. I don't think they'll have the actual shelf motif like Delicious mm-hmm. Library, but I'm imagining something more like the Apple TV interface.
It makes sense to do something like that just because of the Apple TV interface. Apple can more or less standardize their media management interfaces between your Mac or Windows machine and your Apple TV. So I could totally see something like that happening.
Yeah, it would definitely make sense for them to do that. But
now, go ahead. Sorry, the question I had about that, and I'm going to pose to you guys, is, I mean, do you think, you know, what's happening with Front Row? I mean, is iTunes just going to sort of get these more Front Row style views and maybe get a mode where it just takes over the whole screen? I mean, are those two things going to merge? Do we really need two sort of media interfaces into our Macs? Because, you know, I frankly have Front Row, and I never ever really use it. The only people I do know who use it are people who maybe hook their Mac Mini to their home entertainment system, but I have an Apple TV, so I just use that. Beyond those scenarios, I mean, does anybody here use Front Row? And do you think Apple might just be developing some of these other visualizations and views to sort of replace Front Row?
Well, hasn't Front Row always been like the idea behind Front Row is that you can do it from your couch or whatever, so you can be pretty far away from your Mac, so you know,
or your dorm room or something like that. I could see maybe more college people using that. If you've got Elgato, you got your TV stuff going in there, and your computer's doing double duty as your sort of entertainment system in your dorm room or something like that.
Yeah. That's my impression, is that it's a college kid sort of feature that no one else has a use for. I mean, I have a DVD player. I don't need to use Front Row in my computer to watch DVD.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know some people who will use like a 20-inch or a 24-inch iMac that's maybe in the corner of their bedroom sort of as a second TV slash, bedroom office slash sort of multi-use device. And they might use Front Row, but on a daily basis, I don't know many people that use it. And so, I kind of see, as Jeff was pointing out, this adds some more sort of Apple TV-esque features or views into it. And I could just see at some point those two things kind of merging and just becoming your sort of media management and just having sort of one interface. Like I said, that maybe it'll have a mode that you can sort of fully take over the screen, almost like, isn't there a full screen or almost full screen cover flow mode?
Yeah, there's a full screen cover flow mode. But here's what I'm thinking with this whole grid view thing. Isn't there already that grid view in existence in iTunes right now with the if you go into TV shows and movies, you have like the list view, you have the standard, iTunes view that's always been there, and then you have this, I guess you have cover flow as well, but you also have that grid view that's really the new view that they added.
The album, you're talking about the album style view.
Yeah, but when you're in the iTunes, when you're in the movies section, rather, it looks a lot like this quote unquote grid view that we have already in the Apple TV and that we're thinking about.
Yeah, I never really looked at that. Yeah, so somewhat like that, but I think across the board, and I'm picturing it even more just being sort of the album art and title, and then maybe you click on something
and it
just
flips
like
over
Apple
or something.
TV, it flips over. You get more of the detailed views on sort of the episode synopsis and the running time and all that sort of stuff, ratings and stuff like that. Yeah.
So you think they're going to be applying that to the music as well? So you see a whole bunch of albums in a grid view and you click it and it flips over and you get the sort of like iPod on the iTunes, on the iPhone.
For those of
interface.
Us who are more visual and you want that sort of browsing through my CD collection type experience or browsing through my DVD collection type experience. So it's bringing more of that into iTunes. I mean, CoverFlow does that to some degree, but I think, more where it's laid out in a, easy to find visually type thing. Because some people are more visual and some people are more,
Well, I've grown to use the CoverFlow mode quite a bit. I used to be like, I used to just be the person who just did not understand why there was CoverFlow and it just didn't make any sense to me. I do like seeing all of my albums and all of that now, and that's the view that I leave my iTunes in. But I'm thinking about how this grid view thing would work, and if it's set up that you have to actually click each album to flip it over or whatever, I assume that if it is the grid view, it's not going to show you the list of tracks in the album, because that's what we have right now with the album view or whatever it's called. I wonder if we're going to see more of a like the new iPhoto, where if you have an event and it has this, whatever photo set as the static image, to represent that event. But when you mouse over it, you get the, you get to flip through really quick, what's in that photo album or event. I wonder if it'd be something that easy where you just kind of look at your album and you just kind of mouse over it. And then it's sort of, scrolls vertically.
It'd be great for playlists. Too.
Yeah,
I mean, if you had that kind of a view for a playlist, and you could kind of flip through.
Yeah, I could see if it worked really well, if they definitely focused on functionality, if it wasn't just some pretty view that you could go into. They would have to really focus on the functionality of it, or I wouldn't really get any use out of it. Because if it was a bigger pain to go through that than CoverFlow or just the standard iTunes view, then I wouldn't use it. So hopefully they'll do something cool with that.
I'm not sure how effective, I guess, a list of song names would be. I mean, an iPhoto works, of course, because you're looking at the photos. But, a list of names wouldn't... I guess they could do audio like iMovie does. That would be sort of painful, maybe.
Right, yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what that is, if it is there. And what's the other thing with iTunes? It's like there's
HD.
HD, yeah. HD TV shows in there. That was something else that Kevin Rose posted.
That's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, the TV's converting to digital, you know, what, this year or next year? Is it this year?
Next year. In February.
All digital next, you know, by next year, and everything's going to be in HD. So I think they just kind of have to do that. You got to go with the flow. I mean, that's just the way TV shows are coming out now, and there's no reason not to, especially with storage sizes on, you know, on devices getting larger and things like that.
Yeah,
I think it's a given that it'll go that direction. Although I'm not sure what technical issues they might run into if you're downloading HD sized files, and is that going to impact syncing to your iPhone or iPod?
Well, it would, you know, it would take a lot. Go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm pretty sure Apple tipped their hat on this one already, and that HD is probably a done deal. If you remember, about 2 weeks ago, Apple released a new codec for QuickTime that supports HD quality at SD file sizes.
Oh, wow. I didn't hear about that.
That's not, I'm pretty sure that's not for end user use. That's
right. That's for people that are actually encoding the films or the movies. But one of the things in their notes said that you can use that new codec and then do your initial compression and rendering, and then take that rendered file and switch it back to H.264, and you still have all your quality, and you can send it out as H.264.
So would there be two versions?
The way I'm interpreting that is that you could do two versions, but you would actually be doing one version. In the end, it's an H.264 file, but it's been pre-encoded with this new codec that gives you the HD quality at the SD file size. So now, if that's what they're doing, then it makes it very easy to take that HD content and distribute it the same way as they are right now with the SD content without having a hit on bandwidth.
Yeah, I could see that.
I think there's just going to have to be a hit on bandwidth. Otherwise, they'll be able to shrink the SD quality version down even further.
Well, right? And you know, there's that whole debate over what is HD, though, too.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know, HD, a lot of people define by, you know, a certain number of pixels. Other people are going to argue, no, it's more about the bandwidth. I mean,
I think for Apple's purposes, it's 720p.
Yeah. Yeah, currently.
I think that's what we've been seeing with the Apple TV. I think everything that we download in HD for the Apple TV is 720p, right?
Right. And it's not just that, though. It's also heavily compressed.
Yeah.
You know, it's not 20, 40 megabits per second like you'll see, say, on a service like some of the downloadable services from like Microsoft and stuff like that, I think. Or not Microsoft. A couple of the services have, or excuse me, not services, like Blu-ray, like a Blu-ray DVD or an HD DVD is something like 20 or 40 megabit per second data rates, right? And the stuff coming off iTunes is like 4 or something. I'm sure I'm getting my numbers wrong, but I mean, there's a huge difference in terms of the bit rates of the actual files, which does go to affect the actual quality, but also makes the file sizes much, much more manageable.
Well, yeah, and they're also, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but Blu-ray uses H.264 for the compression, right?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, either way, Apple is definitely going to have to compress that. It's not going to be full. I mean, I guess with Blu-ray movies, those are 1080p, first of all. So with Apple, it's going to be 720p. So, you know, there's, you know, a cut in, you know, file size right there. But yeah, we're definitely going to see it compressed. And, you know, H.264, when they first announced it, it seemed like this, you know, great magical codec that would just make everything magically very, very small, and you know, you could put, you know, HD video on your phone and all that, and it just would not matter because it's just so flexible and it does all these great things. But yeah, I mean, at some point, I mean, you can't get a file size down so much, you know, so far without actually losing quality, and that's obviously what they're doing with iTunes. Now, wasn't Arnold? Did you see the what Gizmodo posted about how they have sources that have seen HD actually playing on an iPhone?
Yeah, I saw that report. I didn't really know what to make of it. I'm not sure how you test it. I guess you could Because I think, won't iTunes not let you sync something that's too big? Is that true?
You know, I haven't really tested that. I don't have anything that's like HD quality. And obviously you can't just go to iTunes, at least right now. You can't say, you know, give me the HD version of this movie or whatever in iTunes. You have to do it on your Apple TV. So you can't really transfer it to your iPhone at that point. But yeah. Couldn't someone...
There's a bitrate limit or something. There's a size limit, I think, on what the iPhone can handle. So who knows? I mean, it may be technically possible, but I'm not really sure what the point is, because your resolution is limited, you know, well below HD quality.
Right. But I mean, I guess the point of that would be that you don't have to convert the video before you transfer it over. Right. Because that would take a long, long time to actually to transfer the video. I mean, I wonder if it would take just as long to transfer the video, you know, if it was, you know, however big it is, as compared to compressing it and then transferring it over. Who knows? Because, you know, as we've been seeing with application syncing and all of that, I guess there is zipping and unzipping involved in that. But still, that, you know, the USB connection to the iPhone and iTunes just isn't, you know, isn't that great for transferring very large files.
Right.
As we discussed before.
Yeah. No, you're right. That would be painful to sync a huge, huge video.
Oh, that would be.
Aren't we glad Apple standardized on USB 2?
Yeah, that was swell. Thanks, Apple.
Oh, man. I want my FireWire iPhone. I was very happy to see that when Drobo went to FireWire. I really was looking to get a Drobo. This is totally unrelated, but I was, you know, I may actually get a Drobo now that it's FireWire 800. And I know that's kind of old news, but, you know. At some point, $500 for a Drobo. Anyway, back to what we were talking about.
Back on topic. I kind of found numbers just so I'm getting my numbers right on the data rates. So yeah, Blu-ray is 40 megabits per second, and like satellite broadcast HD is about 25 megabits per second, and I think iTunes is about. You know, iTunes movies are like 1.5 megabits per second. So, I mean, there's huge differences there in terms of the, you know, total number of bits that are flowing through. And back on your topic about, you know, if Apple were to do, even if the iPhone did support 1080p video, you know, Apple's current HD stuff is 720p. File sizes, not just in terms of transferring, but in terms of loading them onto a device, I believe, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I downloaded an HD movie. And I want to say the file size was just under 4 gigabytes for like one film. Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
Through the Apple. I'm sorry. Where'd you download it from?
Through iTunes. You know, standard 720p stuff Apple's delivering for a movie, a 2 hour movie. So about four gigabytes, I want to say, because like a standard def thing is about 1 to 2, depending on length. So I'm just thinking, you know, you got your 8 gigabyte or your 16 gigabyte iPhone. Yeah. If you got 4 gigabyte movie files, you know, you got a storage problem there. I mean, even if they bump them up to 16 or 32, you're not getting a lot of video.
Yeah, it wouldn't be very practical to put HD video on the iPhone, regardless of how well it actually plays a video.
Exactly.
But I'm looking at the video specs on iTunes site. It says that it has to be low complexity H.264 baseline profile at 1.5 megabit per second.
Right.
And I guess it'll do for MPEG-4 stuff. It'll do like 2.5 megabit per second. And I, you know, I guess the person to ask about that is like Alex Lindsay, because he does a lot of the high def stuff. And I've never actually tried syncing high def or even just like playing it, like streaming it off the internet. I've never messed with that. But I got to think that if, you know, at least it's not supported in the software right now. They don't have it set up where you can do that.
High def is, if you want to call 720p at low bit rates, high def. And that's just the debate that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is there's a million things you can call high def. And, you know, purists are going to tell you, well, it needs to be 1080p. It needs to be 40 megabit per second bit rates. It needs to be compressed with these codecs, and you know, so there's a huge debate on HD.
Well, on the Apple spec site, it says 640 by 480 is your highest res.
Yep.
So that, I mean, that pretty much eliminates the possibility of, I mean, well, I don't know if it eliminates, but based on the published specs, you shouldn't be transferring over 720p material.
Yeah.
So Apple's going to either have to have a separate version, dual format downloads, or
Well, they do that already, right? They have the dual format, at least for streaming. You can do the reference video where it, you know connect to a .mov file and it says, okay, what device is this, and it'll choose whichever you want for it. But still, I mean.
I meant for purchasing, yeah.
Yeah, are you going to download like a dual, what do they call it? Universal binary version of the, obviously it's not binary, but, you know, of the movie where you're downloading two versions for your, you know, your iPod and, you know.
That's how other stores are doing it.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess that the, what's the megahertz of the Apple TV processor? Isn't it like 400 something or... I don't remember what that is, but it's an Intel processor, obviously. So I think that even though the megahertz, as far as the iPhone goes, I think it's like 640 and it's clocked down at like 480 or something like that. I think that even though megahertz, you know, may match up, that it's still, you know, probably not as fast as the Apple TV, I would assume. And that would consume a lot of battery life. But anyway, what do you think of the iTunes subscription service rumor that we've heard, Arnold?
I didn't make too much of it. It was just one of those sort of seemingly made up transcripts that someone sent around. I don't think that rumor that was published sort of a lot of places actually had much to it. And especially now, I think, because I don't even remember the details of the of it, but they listed, you know, it was just a laundry list of stuff that including the subscription service. So I don't think that's gonna. And then there's a recent report on CNET that said.
Yeah.
Based on their music sources, Apple just doesn't have the rights to do such a service.
Okay.
So no one's expecting it to happen on Tuesday. That being said, I think based back a few months ago, there was a Financial Times article that said Apple was talking to the music companies about it. So it's definitely still maybe in the works, but from what I could tell, not Tuesday.
Yeah, well, we were talking about last episode that it didn't prove to be a very viable, method for getting music for a lot of other companies who did the subscription services, and it kind of failed for a lot of different companies. But if you think about, there are a lot of people who really would like a subscription service, although I think there are more people who would like to just purchase and own their music. But if iTunes had both of those things in there, they could cater to both of those demographics. And that would be very good for them, obviously. I think it would be good for a lot of people who aren't too keen on the idea of, doing the music subscription thing, so they can get into the subscription, try out a whole bunch of new music, and then, they do the whole, I want to buy this or whatever, discovering new music that way. So, it'd be good for iTunes to have both of those things, but you're not expecting to see it on the 9th.
Right. I mean, the question also is whether the other services failed because they were subscription or because they just weren't the iPod.
Right.
So, I'm sure if Apple does release a subscription service, then people will be happy about it, and people will be, oh, this is the best thing, since sliced bread, versus now everyone's like, I don't need it.
Right. No, I think it'd be a good addition to the store. It wouldn't be, good if they, for example, switched everything to subscription. Obviously they wouldn't do that, but because, most people like owning their music, at least a lot of people do.
I'm listening to you guys talk about this.
Go ahead.
Just from Apple's perspective, I mean, the iTunes Store does very well. I mean,
right.
They're selling a lot of singles. They've kind of redefined it. And the music industry is very upset about this. I've been reading lately, they really don't like the fact that Apple has sort of brought back the singles business, and Apple does very well with it. You don't think that if Apple came out with a subscription service, they'd just be sort of cannibalizing their own market? I mean... Because I think I could easily see myself switching, depending on the pricing. I like owning my music, but frankly, I was just thinking, I haven't bought a CD in forever, and I occasionally buy something on iTunes, but more and more, and maybe this is the reason why Apple would have to do it. I might make my own argument here, but more and more, I'm finding stuff through Pandora, finding stuff on the iPhone. I'm using more streaming services, and then occasionally buying an album here and there. Based on recommendations from friends and whatnot. But, I just have to wonder where's the incentive for Apple to do a subscription service? I never understood where anybody made any money, artists or the company providing the service in a subscription model.
Yeah. Well, I think that the big deal with doing subscriptions, especially tied in with iTunes, is that, you know, it is a discovery vessel for, you know, for people who do the subscription. They'll find new music that they like and then have the ability, at least according to that rumor, which, you know, I don't know how, you know, how accurate that rumor was, that you would be able to, oh, okay, well, I've listened to this song. I want to buy it, so I own it. So that's a discovery method. So it could, you know, in theory, you know, boost sales of, you know, music that people wouldn't normally buy. But at the same time, if you are already subscribing to, you know, iTunes subscriptions and, you know, you're planning to use it for a long, long time, there may not be that benefit of actually just buying it. You may just keep subscribing, you know, renewing your subscription so you can just keep listening to that music.
I think the question also becomes whether or not you believe Apple when they say that iTunes is not a money-making venture and instead is a something to drive hardware sales. Because if you believe that, then the subscription model is just another way for Apple to get tie people in, you know, to iTunes, iPod, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I think the money is made. It's like a buffet model. Some people will, you know, abuse or over, you know, use it, but a lot of people will go months without using it.
Yeah, and you know, I wonder, thinking about, you know, the iPods and all of that, I guess we if they did have a subscription service that they, you know, came out with very soon, if you look at the rentals right now, you have to have a very current iPod. You can't have a, you know, a 5.5G iPod, which I have, and I was very upset that I couldn't, you know, put the rentals on my iPod because it doesn't have the extra security features. You have to have an iPod Classic or a Nano or a, you know, an iPhone or whatever. So I guess it, you know, it would probably work out just the same way with the current line of iPods if they did do a subscription model, because, you know, they've already worked out however they do it with the, you know, timing of being able to, you know, knock up, you know, get rid of the whatever's run out of time, you know, as far as the rentals, if it's, you know, been 24 hours or whatever. But then I wonder how they would actually, how do they do it with like other MP3 players that they, you know, at some point they have to say that I have renewed my subscription. If it doesn't have a connection to the internet, how does it know that you've renewed?
I don't know how it works.
Okay. All right.
Maybe you have to sync within 30 days or something.
Yeah, that would make sense. If you have to just sync and iTunes says, hey, it's cool, then, you know, whatever.
That's my understanding of how it works, is that each time you sync, it does a little phone home and says, okay, are you paid up?
Right.
Hey, see, that's uncool from a user perspective. Let's say that you're going to be traveling with your iPod and your music subscription lapses because you haven't been able to plug back into your Mac or your PC. So now what? You lose all your music. That feels very un-Apple-like to me.
Yeah, well, that's true.
There's this window, like you're saying, it's like a, you know, if you haven't plugged in a window of time, be it 30 days or something like that. So I even believe that some people kind of circumvent, you know, after they've canceled, if you never dock it again, you could get extra time. But I think they don't worry about that because they know, okay, after a 30-day window. So there have to be 30 days between that docking. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you're on vacation for longer than 30 days, yeah, you're hosed. But I don't know about you. I wish I could take 30-day vacation.
Yeah, no kidding. All right.
Yeah.
So let's talk about iPhone 2.1 software update that we're all hoping comes soon. From according to Ars Technica, they say that they've heard iPhone 2.1 will be coming out along with all the new stuff on Tuesday. And obviously, we've heard that, you know, when the first seed came out, it had the push notifications in it, and, you know, the developers had access to at least develop alongside that, I guess. And we're all assuming that, you know, because it's 2.1 and they've been putting out a lot of seeds, that there are going to be, you know, massive bug fixes in it because it's been, you know, out there for so long. They've been, you know, working on it supposedly. I guess that there have been, with the last seed, they removed the push notification from the seed to the developers, and they there's also rumors coming from Ars Technica that there may be even more coming alongside the iPhone 2.1 update. I don't know about you guys, but if I don't see anything new in iPhone 2.1, if I see no push notification services, if I see no cool new features, if it's just the same thing and it works perfectly like it used to, I would be really happy with it.
Oh, yeah. I'd be totally fine with 2.1. No new features, just works.
Yeah.
I would be totally fine.
But then Steve Jobs would have to admit that, you know, iPhone 2.0 kind of sucked. And I don't know if he'd be willing to do that. So there would have to be new features. It's the Apple way to say, look, 2.1, new features. So I guess we're going to be seeing, I'm really looking forward to the push notification services, especially like with things like Twitter and, you know, AIM and stuff like that. Even with eBay, because I've been bidding on something that's been I think it's like a 10-day auction or something like that. And I would really like to see, you know, when I'm outbid on something like that, and that'd be very cool there. Arnold, what do you think about, you know, what we might see in 2.1 besides the push notification services? Do you have any thoughts about that?
I mean, I don't know. That's the wild card, I guess, that might make people, you know, very excited over what's coming. I honestly can't think of what they could include that would
copy and paste.
Copy and paste. A lot of people are asking for it. It'd be nice. It'll get a lot of headlines if they did it. But I don't know how excited that. I mean, it's a nice feature. I'd be happy to have it. But you know, people are hoping for something more dramatic, I guess.
Well, I can see. I think that would be very dramatic. I think everyone right now is looking for copy and paste in the iPhone. And I think that, you know, if Steve Jobs gets up there and says, "Okay, 2.1, it has push notification services, yay!" and then we find out later on that it fixes all the bugs too, it's not going to be as big a splash as saying, and we have copy and paste. I think everyone will really appreciate something like that.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, even my mother, she just, you know, I gave her my old iPhone, and she's just been asking me constantly, where is copy and paste in this thing? I really want to use that. And I thought it was, you know, pretty interesting that she would actually recognize that, you know, copy and paste needs to be there. I just laughed when she asked me the first time. But, you know, I guess there would be copy and paste is one thing. Also, you know, the turn-by-turn directions. I don't know if we've decided whether or not we're going to see that from Apple themselves, which would make a lot of sense because they already have the Maps application. That would be great. But then again, we may see it from a third party, you know, like Garmin or something.
I think that's probably pretty possible.
Adding turn-by-turn?
Yeah, some sort of turn-by-turn support.
I think they have to have that in there just to keep up with the Joneses and to, you know, because so many other 3G cell phone devices have that feature built in there. I think it's just something that's kind of a given on smartphones that have GPS in them. And so that seems like one of those features they have to add at some point just by default.
You know, that makes sense. But keep in mind, copy and paste is a feature that's on everything back to the original Palm Pilot.
Yeah.
And we still don't have that on the iPhone.
True.
Well, wouldn't it be great if they added all these features that we wanted, you know, like the copy and paste, the turn by turn? What about stuff like, you know, my father's been showing me his new Samsung phone that he'd recently gotten, telling me how much better it is than an iPhone because he can watch TV on it and because he can, you know, he gets the turn by turn directions. AT&T does TV, don't they, over their network? Not obviously not with the iPhone, but I believe they do television to some of their cell phones, right?
The live TV stuff?
Yeah, the live TV stuff. So I wonder if, I mean, does that seem like something that Apple would do, or do you think they might run into problems with their content providers with iTunes?
You know, I could see Apple doing something like that, but not till next year.
Not until
and
next
year. The reason
year.
Being is because, from what I understand, the broadcasts that AT&T is sending out are all analog.
Oh, okay.
So come February, they break.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. What about A2DP?
Why don't they have that? It's funny. I've been in the Apple Store just browsing twice, and each time I overheard somebody asking one of the salespeople there about the iPhone, does it support stereo Bluetooth? Just like random things, because they're like, my current phone does, and I have to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just cracked me up because the sales guy always goes, oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to check on that. And I just look at the guy and I'm like, it does. Just forget it. It doesn't do it.
So well, I think that,
like,
you know,
they don't like me.
We've been talking about A2DP and the iPhone on and off. And I think that we, the conclusion that we came to, at least for most of us, that is that it's just such a power drain. But you know, then again, so is GPS. GPS is a huge power drain, and it really depends on whether or not you're using it. And I think at this point, you know, most consumers who at least are savvy enough to have A2DP Bluetooth headsets are aware of the fact that, yeah, it's going to drain the battery. Maybe not as much as, you know, having GPS on constantly. But you know, we have 3G already. That's a big power drain. And there's even a little, you know, a switch to turn off 3G because it says it may improve battery life and push too. So I think that, you know, the ability to have the A2DP and it'll, you know, even if it had a pop-up that said, you know, A2DP, you know, uses more battery life than, you know, standard Bluetooth, blah, blah, blah. Are you sure you want to enable? Just something like that. I don't think it would be that big of a deal if it is, in fact, just battery life that, you know, Apple is concerned about. And I don't think that is what it is. I just, you know, I guess it's Apple and, you know, their big list of to-dos for the iPhone, and they're maybe waiting to do it, you know, at some point for, you know, iPhone 3.0 or whatever. But, you know, I guess that's another obvious thing that they could add, because as far as I know, it's you know, maybe just a kernel extension that they need to add to the iPhone OS.
You know, there's a lot of things Apple could add, but most of those I think they won't. And the reason being is, if you look at Apple historically, they have this really strong track record of giving us as consumers what they want us to have and not what we think we want them to give us. And so I have a feeling there's a lot of features that fall in that category for the iPhone. And it wouldn't surprise me if Bluetooth stereo happens to be in that mix as well, for whatever reason.
Well, I've noticed that they, you know how they had the iPhone dual dock for the iPhone Bluetooth headset and the iPhone itself, where you just put it together and it would pair itself. They haven't updated that for the iPhone 3G, and it's kind of been frustrating because I have an Apple Bluetooth headset and I love the ability to just, you know, put them together and, you know, they charge and all of that. It's a great solution. They don't have it updated for the iPhone 3G, and that got me thinking, you know, what if they're planning on, you know, releasing maybe a new version of that dual dock, but maybe even they're going to be bringing out their own stereo Bluetooth headset, and that's what they've been working on. They're waiting on, for, you know, adding that to the iPhone. They want to have their own product out there to take advantage of A2DP before they actually release it.
Okay, well, that would make sense, because then it goes back to the same thing where Apple is controlling the entire product and they're giving us what they want us to have and not what we think we want them to give us.
Right. Hopefully it's not, you know, I've always, whenever one of my regular iPod headsets would crap out, it was either the left or the right. It wasn't both of them. At some point, I had gotten so many of them that, you know, one of the two had gone out, that I actually started taking them apart and resoldering, you know, new pieces on there. And so I have a whole bunch of these, you know, little earbuds with, you know, the stick and the little round piece with no wire coming out of it. And, you know, whenever people see those, they say, oh, is this Bluetooth? Is it wireless?
And you say, yes, it is.
I just say, yes, it is. but, you know, it'd be really cool if they did something like that. You know, with the iPhone Bluetooth headset, it can fall out of your ear pretty easily. So I hope that they work on some way of, you know, making that fit a little better. I noticed that the current iPod earbuds that are wired are shaped a little differently, so maybe they fit in the ear better. It'd be very cool if they did something like that. I don't know if I guess with the ones that I've seen, there's actually a wire connecting the two. Are there any that just are two satellite Bluetooth things that, you know, connect to the phone? Or I don't know.
I think you'd need two transmitters then.
Yeah, I guess you would. Or maybe, you know, one talks to the other and there's like a master one that talks to the phone. I don't know. I could see Apple doing something very cool, and that would make a lot of sense if they were waiting for, you know, their own device to do that. So I would like that. And we have a guy in our forums who would really, really like that. His name is like Mad Scientist or something, and he's always ranting about how he just does not like the iPhone because it doesn't have A2DP in it. But have you guys noticed that certain Bluetooth headsets don't work with iPhone 2.0 to check voicemail. I ran into a guy at New Media Expo who said that his current Bluetooth headset stopped working when he updated to 2.0 for checking voicemail, which is really strange. Have you run into that, Jeff or Adam or Arnold? Have you heard of that?
I've had issues periodically with my first gen and my second gen iPhones where just out of the blue, I could not do voicemail from my Jabber headset.
Strange.
But it's not consistent.
Okay. So it does work sometimes.
Yes.
I have had really strange behavior with my Apple Bluetooth headset. It's, you know, even just the standard one that they, you know, Apple recommends and obviously they make. And it works really great with the phone when it does work. But with 2.0, it's been doing some really strange things. Like, you know, I would go to answer the phone and I would get absolutely no audio out of the headset. And the only solution I've tried, you know, restarting the headset, restarting the phone, the only solution is to like, you know, remove it from the paired list and then repair it with the phone. So I don't know. iPhone bugs, I guess. But, you know, it'd be great to see a nice Apple created A2DP headset, wireless headset. That'd be great. I've been waiting for that for a long time, obviously since I've started, you know, pulling earbuds apart and thinking about how cool that would be.
You know, that's just awesome. I have this vision of you with like Dr. Horrible goggles on and then doing this microsurgery on earbuds.
Have you seen Jonathan Colton's business card? It's just a picture of, well, obviously it has his information on one side, but on the other side, it's a picture of him just standing there staring at the camera with a soldering iron in his hand and just some random hand coming in from the side with like a circuit board, and he's just kind of soldering something, and he's got a lab coat on and he's just standing there.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. I thought that was great when I saw it. What else do we have to talk about? We have the iPod Touch redesign. I guess it's going to look a lot more like the iPhone 3G. What do you guys think is going to happen with the iPod Touch? Right now, it's kind of, I mean, obviously there's no contract attached to it, but, you know, the iPhone is, you know, more affordable and, you know, what are they going to do with the iPod Touch? Are they going to increase the sizes? Are they going to, I mean, I guess if they go with the iPhone, you know, beveled back, they may be able to fit a little bit more memory in there. And I guess, you know, since they first brought it out, they, you know, chip densities have gotten better. Arnold, what do you think about, you know, what we're going to see with the next iPod Touch redesign?
Yeah, well, the, you know, the diagrams that were posted on iLounge probably are close to right, if the rest of it's to be believed, all the other rumors to be believed. You know, the big thing that people are hoping for are GPS and or camera functionality into the Touch. And I think those are going to be the most likely possibilities, because I don't think Apple's going to want to splinter the platform any further.
Yeah.
In that if they introduce an iPod Touch with, I don't know, some feature that the iPhone doesn't have,
right,
then suddenly people are going to be programming for the iPhone, the iPod Touch, and then this new iPod Touch. And so it's going to make it harder to figure out.
Right. And having the iPod Touch being, you know, so much better as far as like there's so many location-based social networking applications out there that would really benefit from having you know, the GPS or location services that, you know, an iPod Touch could bring to that. You know, there are a lot of iPod Touch users out there who would love to have something like that, and I think there are, you know, many more younger people who have, you know, the iPod Touch as opposed to an iPhone, so I think that may help them out even more. But I hadn't actually heard about the camera or the GPS rumor.
These aren't rumors. These are just people guessing or hoping. Okay. But in terms of, like, you know, what could be realistically done in a way that, you know, wouldn't cause problems for developers in terms of the app, you know, the app store is new and they're trying to, you know, have this one unified platform to release applications for. You know, certainly introducing a true GPS into the iPod Touch could, you know, seems within the realm of possibility. It also would replace the location-based services that are just based on the Wi-Fi networks.
Yeah,
and that doesn't work very well. It would tie in well, for example, with a turn-by-turn GPS solution too.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. It'd be a little weird having it, you know, in an iPod and not, you know, like a phone. But it would certainly, it'd be nice.
Well, both. I imagine it would, if it
right,
came
yeah.
out, it would be for everything.
Yeah.
Along along those same lines, wouldn't you guys think that because of all of the iPhone applications that take advantage of sound and potentially some sort of audio input, wouldn't they have to, or wouldn't it be smart for them to also add external speakers and possibly a mic? I think the mic's less likely, but at the very least, for a lot of the games and stuff, I mean, the iPod or the iPhone and the iPod Touch are getting a lot of great buzz as a gaming platform.
Yeah.
And so many games rely on sound or so many things. And a lot of them are things that you want to show off to people. So, you know, having headphone a set saber. Of headphones in isn't necessarily conducive to that. So,
yeah,
that seems like a simple thing. And I don't think it would fragment, you know, iPhone sales to have just throw a speaker in there.
That would be great.
I could definitely see a better speaker than what you have now, which is that what little piezo thing that just goes beep.
Yeah, well, I meant in the iPod Touch, which doesn't have an external speaker at all.
Yeah, it's just got the little piezo.
Oh, it does?
Well, does it do the clicking and stuff like that for like keyboard tapping and all that.
But you're not getting game sounds coming out of that or any sound effects if you have, you know, an app like Phone Saver, which I guess is coming back, right?
I think, is it back right now?
It's coming back.
It's coming
back?
It's back yet. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, we definitely heard. I guess it's LucasArts bought that, and or not bought it, but just kind of said that they're taking over it and they're going to add some extra features to it. But yeah, the iPod Touch, regardless of what they're going to be doing with it, I think it's going to feel like a more solid and more thought out product this time around if they do, release an update to that, because the iPod Touch was really just sort of, at least I felt it was kind of rushed out, you know, because everyone was saying, oh man, I love the iPhone, but you know, I like everything about it, but I just don't want the phone part. I want an iPod that, you know, does all the touch stuff. And I think that's kind of where the iPod Touch came out of. I think they were planning on doing a touch iPod, but it felt really rushed, especially with all the strange glitches that you were seeing from, you know, various reports where, you know, there was this like, I don't know, it was like a self-test. I think one of the iPods came to a user stuck in self-test mode. Or factory test mode, rather. And, you know, it talked about camera and it talked about Bluetooth. And actually, I believe if you plugged it into a Windows computer, I don't know if it was also on Macs, but it would say, you know, would you like to import photos from this device? And, you know, it didn't have a camera. It wasn't an iPhone. So I think whatever we see with it's going to feel so much better. And I think it'll have more unique features to it. As far as, you know, an iPod goes, I think that, you know, at some point Apple should add a speaker to the iPod, you know, as, you know, because the whole like sharing an earbud thing is just so, you know, it's really
unsanitary.
It's unsanitary. Yes. That was the word I was looking for. But I absolutely love that part about the iPhone. When someone talks to me, they say, "Well, I think I'm going to get an iPod Touch," and I just say, "No, you should really get an iPhone, just for the sake of, you know, the speaker there." Because, you know, if you think about it, even though the speaker doesn't have that great a quality and for music and all of that, you can still, you know, get some audio out of there, and it's just such a big deal for me. You know, when Steve Jobs was talking about all the features that the iPhone would have, an external speaker for playing music just was, you know, it really caught my eye. So, you know, other than that, I guess, you know, a redesign for the iPod Touch, maybe a larger size, I guess, if they're going to be rolling out, you know, iTunes HD. And I think that, you know, they're up to 32 gigabytes right now, right? With the iPod Touch.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I think that, I wonder if they would ever add a hard drive to the iPod Touch. I guess it's, you know,
I doubt it.
You doubt it? Why do you doubt it?
Because if you put a hard drive in there, it's going to get thicker. And one of the really sexy things about the iPod Touch is how thin it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking, yeah, obviously that it would get thicker. But I think there are a lot of people who would really not mind that. They would say, okay, well, I've got the best of both worlds. I got, you know, iPod classic style, you know, size and, you know, the ability to do the multi-touch and all these applications. So it'd be interesting to see that.
You know, Apple could always, down the road, change what the classic is. And then, of course, it's not the classic anymore.
Right.
And create a new iPod that has a form factor similar to the classic, but also includes a touch screen. And then they wouldn't call it an iPod Touch because you know, they want to keep the sexy thing of the iPod Touch going and then have this other device that includes touch as well.
Yeah. I think at some point we're going to see the entire line move toward multi-touch, just like, you know, we're all anticipating the Mac line at some point moving to multi-touch and all of that. So, you know, I doubt that we're going to see anything like that as far as, you know, a redesign for the iPod Classic at the event on Tuesday. But
right. And actually, I'm going to now argue with myself on okay. that point and say, if the rumors that Apple is really, truly working on a tablet-type computer at this point, redesigning the classic-type device to include the hard drive and the touch interface might not make sense. Why not have this subcompact tablet device with a hard drive that does all of that instead?
So what would this tablet device be? Would it be like an ultra-mobile PC-type idea, or are we thinking it's going to be bigger?
You know, I'm thinking, go ahead.
There's been both talk about both, I think, but go on.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I was going to say it makes more sense, at least in my mind, if Apple really does go down this path, to go with something that's more along the lines of ultra mobile PC styling, simply because you can get away with maybe having a little bit lower horsepower in the processor and doing some things that can help conserve energy that way, as opposed to having something that's like essentially a MacBook with a touch interface.
Right, like the what's that? The ModBook.
Right.
Yeah. So, I don't know how I feel about the tablet thing. I never really thought that the tablet would catch on. Obviously, it hasn't in the PC space as far as tablets. And, you know, Microsoft had the whole, you know, ultra mobile PC thing, and it was like, hey, this is going to be a great, you know, huge deal. I remember the teaser website and all of that, and it just, I mean, I don't see any ultra mobile PCs anywhere.
Well, it's because they suck ass.
Exactly. So,
you know, it's funny because I don't want the ultra mobile PC thing. I want it the other way, to be more of a, you know, enlarged tablet, sort of the thing that Andy Anako talks about, where it's like an iPod Touch or an iPhone, but just maybe half the size of a MacBook screen, and then turn it on its side. So maybe a 9-10 inch screen or something like that. But I think the thing that would put it over the top for me and would maybe justify the cost for some people is if it had a technology like this DisplayLink technology in it. Are you guys familiar with it? You can hook up, you know, through USB, and it's kind of like a graphics technology. And while that thing was docked, so I would assume you'd dock and sync stuff to it through the iTunes store. But while it was docked, that you could then have it plugged in on USB or through the dock connector, and it could also serve as a second monitor. So I almost see it as like an additional device to your Mac. And so you can pop that thing off, and while you're walking around the house, you can surf the web and do your iTunes and do all that stuff. You know, it's that living room computer that I pop off my desk and take with me. But when it's docked, it also serves another purpose. And everybody's been wondering about what Apple's going to do with their, you know, cinema displays and things like that. And I think that kind of device, that gets to that Star Trek thing that we kind of started the
show off
with, where this is like a pad. This is a second portal to your internet, to your desktop, and that becomes a really interesting device for me. And I think that justifies, you know, a higher price point of, say, like an $800, $900,000 type device if it serves these multiple kind of functions and uses, well, at least for me. So I'm kind of excited
would be
about that.
Very compelling.
You know, I don't see it being like a sync through iTunes type of device. I see it more of a sync through, you know, if you are going to have sync, which I think the whole point of something like that would be that you have all of your information synced. I think it would be more of a, you know, through Mobile Me rather than have anything to do with iTunes at all. I think it would be just another Mac that you have, but it's just, you know, it's a tablet Mac instead of, you know, being an iPhone that you have to do all of your stuff through iTunes with. But yeah, outside of that, I think that it would have to definitely have, you know, enough horsepower. I think it would have to be up in the range of, you know, maybe slightly less than the MacBook Air. But it would definitely have to be able to get a lot of work done to be truly useful, I think, instead of it being just a portal to all of your information, because I think that the iPhone really is that right now. It would definitely have to get a lot of work done and, you know, be your portable Mac.
I think it would still be running a full OS, but yeah. I could see it. You're going to have it at some point you know, I think it would still dock because I think you're still going to, you know, Apple's going to this model where we buy apps off of the, off of, you know, this sort of store that they have, this iTunes store. And you know, I agree it would sync in multiple ways. Again, just like an iPhone or an iPod Touch, you know, it's just a larger form factor, but I think it would be more of a full-featured, you know, sub-notebook in terms of, like, processor. And I think it would still be running, you know, I don't know if it would be a slimmed-down version of the OS, so, you know, like the iPhone, or if it would just be full-blown OS X. But,
I think it would be full-blown OS X. If to be, you know, useful to me, I think it would have to be full-blown OS X with maybe, like, a front-row-style interface for it, maybe. So the ability to just kind of walk around and have it be that, you know, Star Trek pad and, you know, be able to just do stuff by moving it around and all of that. Maybe, you know, with Snow Leopard, I think they would have to actually move, you know, to the next generation of the OS for that to actually make sense and work on a tablet Mac.
Yeah. I don't see it being a primary computer. To me, it seems like the person that's going to buy that, you're going to buy it as the sort of secondary, more portable device that you're going to take with you when you don't want to take, you know, a full laptop or you don't want to carry around. You know, again, I constantly think of when I have a laptop, there's a lot of times when I just have it in bed and I have it in the living room and I'm watching TV or doing something else, but I'm not doing really heavy lifting on it. I'm not, you know, writing Word documents. I'm surfing the internet. I'm answering email. And I'm doing those sorts of functions.
But see, here, the biggest problem I've always had with the idea of having a tablet Mac is that you're talking about what purpose this would serve, what, you know, what this would take up. And you look at, you have your desktop, you have the iMac, let's say, and then you have, you know, the MacBook. And, you know, that's your portable Mac. And you also have your iPhone now, which, you know, is your phone plus your iPod plus, you know, all the other all that extra information that you would need for a phone, you know, plus more. So I guess that, you know, what you're talking about, this tablet Mac would have to go in between a MacBook and an iPhone. And I don't know that there is a huge market for that. And I think, you know, I would have said that Apple wouldn't go with something like that until I saw the MacBook Air, which is kind of like, you know, really close to a MacBook and, you know, much further away from an iPhone, obviously, because it is a full computer. But I, you know, I wonder if Apple would really diversify their product line that much. Probably not right now. Maybe, you know, in the future and, you know, in another year or so after they've gotten, you know, Snow Leopard out there. Because
I do that's think why that that's why I'm saying, you know, if you had these multiple uses, we're saying exactly the same thing, I think, because I'm saying, you know, if while sitting on my desk, well, here, it's an extra display. I can throw a palette on and I can use this. Now I can pick it up and take it in my living room and do this. And also, hey, look, you can take it on the road. If you just want a bigger display for watching movies because you're going to go on the airplane and you don't want to use your iPhone for that, you know, you have that device, too. So that's why I see it as sort of this secondary devices,
yeah.
Not
and I think that primary. Apple would definitely put a big media spin on there. Come to think of it, when you're mentioning the whole movie thing, I think that they would definitely, you know, say that this is a great media device and you can listen to all your music on there and all that. So, but you know, then again, I would probably have a flash-based hard drive, not an actual, you know, physical spinning disc. But you know, I guess we're looking way too far into the future. But you know, it definitely, you know, has a lot to do with the iPhone and the multi-touch and all that, where that's going, because I do think that that's, you know, that's where everything's going to be headed, you know, with multi-touch, because the ability to directly interact with your information and the stuff on the screen really has changed, obviously, the mobile phone, because, you know, with current mobile phones, it's, you know, all about the directional pad and, you know, selecting things, and you can just get so much more done, and you can, it's a much more fluid interface when you can actually interact with the data and all of that with your fingers. So, you know, there you go. I think that's where it's headed.
Obviously. Yeah, no, I'm a proponent of the tablet Mac of sorts. I've always sort of thought it was an interesting, cool idea. I think what's most interesting is that, you know, you look back at the iPod, and people, when the iPod came out, people were like, oh, you know, MP3 player, who cares? And then, you know, Apple did it well. Same with the iPhone. There were cell phones before, but then the iPhone came out, and suddenly they did it, you know, really well. So well enough. So the hope amongst at least the pro tablet folk, I think, is that, you know, Apple will take the tablet, the OMPC or whatever, and actually, you know, give it that extra edge that makes it actually useful, or at least compelling or exciting.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is that Apple was working on a tablet, and this came out in an article, and it was actually called the Safari Pad. And then that technology moved over, and that's what became the iPhone. So, you know, so web browsing was presumably what they considered the killer feature for a mini tablet. And they developed presumably the mobile Safari with the zooming and the scrolling, which works remarkably well, you know, for a cell phone. On a small screen, that probably is one of the killer features on the iPhone itself. So it'll be interesting to see what they decide, if they decide that they can pull off a tablet or a mini tablet, what that would entail, or what sort of that killer feature would be. And I think having more space, you know, you look at the demos of Surface and Jeff Hand's multi-touch videos, and you see all these people moving photographs around, and there is a lot more you probably could do with a full multi-touch space rather than two fingers on the iPhone, for example.
Well, it could move to a zooming user interface or something at some point, I guess. But I think that for a tablet to make sense in Apple's product line, at least, you know, looking far down the line, I think it would be kind of moving, you know, slowly toward the multi-touch, because I don't think Apple's going to go say, you know, hey, here's the multi-touch iMac, here you go. I think it does need to ease, they do need to ease people into the new way of interacting with computers, because right now we're so used to the keyboard and the mouse. Having a multi-touch tablet as the next step past the iPhone makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to have to, we're going to have to start wrapping this up, because Adam actually has to take off. So let's do our iPhone picks real quick. Do you have an iPhone pick for us, Adam?
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna cheat, because I was trying to think of an iPhone pick, and then as we were talking about the whole earbud sharing thing, and there's a product I've been wanting. So I don't own this product, but I've been wanting to play with it, and it's gotten some good reviews, and it's a simple enough product that I'm gonna just assume it works.
Okay.
So if anybody knows differently, let me know. But have you guys seen the Belkin Rockstar?
I have not.
It's a silly device, but basically it looks like a little asterisk. And it's got a little cable coming off one end. You plug it into your iPhone, and it lets you hook up to 5 other devices to one device. So you can plug, you know, four iPods and one set of headphones, and then sort of live mix.
Okay, yeah, I've
music
seen this.
Together.
Yeah.
Or you could have 5 people listening to one iPod, you know, all with different headphones and headsets. So, it's one of those weird things that I think has a very limited use, but it solves this earbud sharing problem.
Yeah, have you? So it'll actually, you can plug in more than one iPod as well, so you can feed it more?
Or other, anything with a mini, you know, a 3.5-inch mini jack. Yeah, so you can do DJ mixing for your friends if you wanted to plug in 3 iPods and
so it's
you know,
a
2
big
sets
splitter.
Of headphones. Or, yeah.
Okay, so it's just one big splitter that really kind of brings together the entire, all the audio and, you know, takes whatever input and gives it out to whatever's plugged into that will receive it.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So if you want to really just drive yourself nuts, you could, you know, plug in 5 iPods and one set of headphones. And,
yeah. How much do you know how much that product is?
$20, $19.99.
Okay.
And, I just saw that, iLounge gave it a B+ rating. So it's probably pretty, like I said, it's a simple enough product that, you know, it just looks like something that'd be fun to play around with. I don't know how useful it is, but it, the jack coming off of it is the nice slim one. So it'll plug into older iPhones.
Oh, cool.
And iPod touches as well. And it's from Belkin. So if they're listening, you know,
there
love
you go.
To check one out.
Yeah. So that is the Belkin Rockstar. It's available for $20 at Belkin.com. And I will let you go to dinner, Adam. So
yes, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun, as always. Sorry, I got to duck out a little bit early.
Yep. Well, I got
something for us since you're taking off for food.
Yes. And so Adam Christensen of the MacCast at MacCast.com. And you can that's his podcast. And you can follow him on Twitter at Twitter.com/MacCast. Thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.
See ya.
All right. Let's move on. Jeff, do you have a pick?
I do. My pick is the Lux case for my frogs. I started playing with this case about maybe a week and a half ago. And this is the first case that I've had for my iPhone 3G, and I'll throw in my original iPhone with that too, that I was happy to use for more than a week. And it's a two-piece hard shell that wraps around the back, and it has kind of a metallic look to it, and the bottom of it slides off so you can put the your iPhone back in a dock without taking the rest of the case off. And it doesn't stick up hardly at all above the edges, so you can still do your delete email swipes without without having any obstructions. The openings around the ports and the buttons are big enough so that pretty much anyone's finger can get at them, but they're not so big that you're exposing large areas of the case to scratching. I'm really impressed with this little case.
Cool.
And it's like $20.
And how do you spell that? It's L-U-X?
It's L-U-X-E.
Lux. Okay.
And it's from iFrogs.
Okay. iFrogs, I-F-R-O-G-S. Or Z.
Z, that's it.
Z. Yeah. And that's $20, you said?
Right. And it was a big hit, unintentional, but there you go. Big hit at Photoshop World. Every time I was on the expo floor and pulled my phone out because someone was texting me or I had to check an appointment or it was phone, whatever.
Or you were showing off.
Or I was showing off. Sure. The conversation would stop and everyone would go, let me see that case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so people that were seeing it for the first time were really taken by it, and I think there's like five people that I still need to email that really wanted to know the name of it and all that. So for all of you that are listening that I'd promised to email the info to, don't worry, I haven't forgotten.
Cool. And so that's $20, the Lux case, and I guess it's, what is it, ifrogs.com, I assume? Something like that. Google search it.
Probably, yeah. Google's a beautiful thing.
Yes. Arnold, what is your iPhone pick?
I actually picked an app just because that's what sort of I've been focusing on lately. And the one that I came across, it was a couple of weeks ago now, so people may already know about it. It's called Mach Dice, M-A-C-H space Dice, D-I-C-E. And it's just a dice roller application. But it's very well done, and it's very flexible. So if there's anyone who has any virtual dice needs, it's actually a very good application. It's not entirely unlike Motion X poker and Motion X dice, mm-hmm. in which you actually have go on.
I'm just go ahead.
Yeah, where you have virtual dice on your screen and then you shake the phone and the dice roll. But what's nice about Mach Dice is that it allows you to basically enter an arbitrary number of dice, up to 100 dice, dice, and also an arbitrary number of sides per each die.
Yeah, I was going to ask about 12-sided dice die.
You can go anywhere from, I guess, 4-sided dice up to 100-sided dice, though the 100-sided dice are anything that's a non-standard dice size is represented by a virtual dice of like 20 sides with question marks.
I was going to say, if they actually rendered something like that, it would probably roll very slowly.
Yeah, no, but it looks impressive, and you can, you know, you have like, you know, 20-sided die, and they'll roll, and it's nice, and there's a little sort of 3D perspective on it. When you tilt the phone back and forth, you can kind of see the top of the dice sort of move back and forth. So it's very well done. It's 99 cents, and if really there's any need for virtual dice, I would recommend it.
Excellent. And that you can find that in the App Store. It's Mach Dice, M-A-C-H space dice.
D-I-C-E, uh-huh.
Cool. And so my pick, I may have picked this before, or we may have had this picked by someone else on the show, but I'm going to pick it again because Twitterific just came out with Twitterific version 1.1. And when I reviewed Twitterific on the site, I had a few things that I didn't like about it that I mentioned in the review. I found Twitterific 1.1 really kind of rounds Twitterific out for the iPhone and makes it a great application. I'm actually now with 1.1 using the iPhone version more than I am the desktop version, just because it's so much nicer and I can get to it whenever I need to, whenever I have a spare moment. I can actually read through my tweets because I think I'm following maybe like 60 people at this point, and that's really my limit because I can only read through so many tweets and so many at replies about having coffee and stuff like that. But so the new additions, at least the ones that I'm happy about, there are tons of them, and I actually listed them out on iPhone Alley, as well as, you know, they're obviously listed on the Twitterific page in the App Store, but it now has it now stays at the last tweet that you've read. So the scroll position is saved when you leave the application, or when the tweets are actually refreshed, you just get more tweets above it, and so there's more space to scroll. But your position, as far as where you've looked at your tweets, you're stuck there until you actually move. So it adds the ability to read through your tweets chronologically without having to go back and figure out where you left off and all that. So it's a lot less annoying in that sense as well. They've really increased the speed and the performance of Twitterific. So now it scrolls a lot smoother. I heard that they cleaned up a lot of memory leaks and all that stuff. So it's a really, really great app. I love it. Now, and it also changes. It used to be that you had to either in the settings, you'd have to say, I want to be able to take a picture directly with the camera when I say I want to tweet a picture, or you have to choose from your camera roll. Now when you click the camera icon, it'll actually give you a selection of, do you want to take the picture directly, or do you want to, pull it from your camera roll? You can, choose that and do whatever. It'll also save pictures that you take, through Twitterific to your phone in case, TwitPic fails and it doesn't go up correctly, then you can choose it later. And so a lot of cool features are added. And it's also improved the accuracy of the location, and it changed, how it shows your location on Twitter. So when you actually, have it update your location, it'll show a city and state instead of, actual GPS coordinates, which were pretty far off anyway. So Twitterific 1.1, that is my pick. And I actually use Twitterific Premium. I think it's $10, and that gets rid of the ads, which I don't like having ads on my iPhone apps. When I heard, there were a lot of people emailing me and talking about how, they were developing, third parties were developing ways of advertising in iPhone apps, and that just did not seem like a good idea to me, because, the iPhone has such limited resources already. Obviously, with, 2.0, it's been very buggy in general. So, adding ads to the mix and, having to download those ads from the internet, I don't like that. So, I think that if you don't really like the ads, Twitterific Premium, $10 is a good investment in Twitterific. If you really, are a Twitter fan and you like Twitterific, give Twitterific, the standard Twitterific a try. It has all the same bug fixes and all that. And if you like it, buy it. So that's Twitterific 1.1. And Jeff, have you tried out the new Twitterific?
I have not. It came out, it was like on Thursday, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
When it came out, it came out just at the right time that I just simply didn't have time to deal with it.
Gotcha.
So I was following everyone on Twitter while I was in Vegas, just talking about the new features and thinking, well, I want that too. So I'm actually planning on doing the update after we're done recording.
Cool. And Arn, do you tweet from your iPhone, or do you just keep it from the desktop?
I primarily, even when I use the iPhone, I generally go to just the mobile website just to catch up. I tried Twitterific and the others early on, but there were some issues, and maybe I'll try the new one again to see if it's any better.
So there you go. Twitterific. I love Twitterific. Icon Factory's great. They should sponsor the show. Anyway, so we should talk about bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com.
Those are good people.
I love CashFly. They're so nice for hosting our podcast. And don't forget to check out iPhoneLA.com. It's, the place to get iPhone news, tips, and reviews. Every single day we, do updates on, new applications. We do reviews and all that. And if you'd like to share a tip with us, we do a lot of tips. And if you have a tip that we haven't covered and you'd like to share it with us, go ahead and click on the Contact Us link in the sidebar of the site. And also, we do a lot of reviews as far as like applications and products, but, we can't, read everyone's mind. And there are so many different things. We don't, we can't review everything. So if you have a suggestion, if you want to, get an iPhone accessory, but you're not sure about it, or if you want to get an application and you're not sure, you can also use that contact form to say, hey, could you review this? And, we'll try and do that. So if you want to do that, go ahead. And if you are looking for show notes for the podcast, you can check out iPhoneLA.com/podcast, and you can send feedback for the regarding the show and questions and all that to podcast@iphonela.com. And so Jeff Gamet is a managing editor at the Mac Observer and the iPod Observer at macobserver.com and iPodObserver.com. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's always fun, especially since I know there's cookies in it for me.
There are always cookies involved.
And your cookies do rock.
They do. I love my cookies. I've been trying to cut back on the cookies. I did cookies like, you know, every other day at some point, and that didn't turn out well. So,
you know, as long as you're bringing them to expos, the events where we're all going to be there, that's often enough for me.
Yeah, it's often enough for me too. I'll see about bringing cookies to Macworld as well, because, you know, everyone I talk to, you know, like Amber MacArthur and Justine Azarek and, you know, all those people, they all loved my cookies as well. So it was a good way for people to, you know, remember who I am. I'm the guy with the cookies. So there's that.
There is that.
And Arnold Kim is at MacRumors at MacRumors.com, and he does a great job with that site. I read MacRumors constantly, even before I had iPhone LA, and I still read MacRumors. I love MacRumors. They have a great forum community, as well as, you know, he's always got the latest rumors on, you know, all things Mac and all things iPod and iPhone, everything there at MacRumors.com. So thank you so much for being here, Arnold.
Great. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been a while. You've been asking for a little while, and I just haven't had the time, but I made the time. It was great.
You quit your day job.
I did. I quit. I quit in July, early July. So yep. it's been a couple of months now.
Yep. You used to be a doctor.
I used to be a doctor.
Which is very cool that you quit being a doctor so you could do Mac Rumors.
Yeah, it's always an interesting conversation.
Cool. Yeah. And Jeff, I forgot your Twitter. Your Twitter is twitter.com/jgamet, right?
Right.
And Arnold, what's your Twitter?
Arnold Kim.
Arnold Kim. So check him out on Twitter. My Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And so I guess that wraps everything up. Another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
And an internet
communicator.
How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus.
You have to get them and put them away.
Made up.